A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, four tremendous nerds, strong on the geek side of the Force, came together to face their greatest challenge yet, the behemoth known as the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
Now witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational battle station.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets illusions of grandeur.
Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
Sir, it's quite possible this asteroid is not entirely stable.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
I have a bad feeling about this.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Must be an awakening. Have you felt it?
Welcome to Thrawn and On and On, a Star Wars literary podcast. I'm Sean.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Kate.
And you're here for a very special, very wonderful podcast about the Star Wars Expanded Universe, if that was not already obvious. So a little bit about this project. It's something I've wanted to do, which is to do a reread, and then I started talking with Sarah and Kate. And they were like, why don't we do a podcast? And I was like, that's a great idea. That way I don't have to read and talk into the ether by myself. And then we started doing that. And then Rachel came along. And she wanted to be a part of this. As she's wont to do. It also helps that I'm pretty sure everyone on this podcast except me basically fell in love with Star Wars The Force Awakens, including Sarah, who is a brand new Star Wars fan. Which is the one reason that I love Star Wars The Force Awakens, is that we now have new fans. So the whole point was to, you know, explore the expanded universe. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books. There's so many stories, so many weird stories. Like, for heaven's sake, they've got books about random guys in the cantina scene. We know their stories now. We know who their sisters were, whether they got married and had babies, right? Maybe they were insect babies and they, like, laid their larvae inside people and it's like, whatever, right? Who knows? Maybe Ewoks, they're like, that's part of their life cycle and they put, right? I'm mixing aliens and Star Wars, whatever. I don't care. So that's kind of the whole point of this, is to be an exploration. And it happens to be really wonderful that we have four very different people in terms of their engagement with Star Wars. I've been a Star Wars fan since I was a little kid. Sarah is a brand new Star Wars fan. She just watched the movies, I think, towards the end of last year or maybe just at the beginning of this year. If I recall correctly. Is that correct, Sarah?
Yeah, it was right around Christmas.
Yeah, so you're brand new.
Yes.
And
brand new.
Kate, I believe you've obviously seen the films, but you're new to a lot of the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
That's correct. I first saw what they now call A New Hope in the movie theater, the year after it came out, because I live in Wyoming and everything took longer to get here back when there were still, you know, just six or seven prints in the world. So I was 8 years old in 1978 and saw it in this tiny little movie theater right here in my hometown and fell in love and watched them all. And I read the storybooks, you know, those illustrated kind of middle grade, the Star Wars storybooks. And, but I always meant to read some of the novels, but I hadn't gotten around to it until I read Heir to the Empire like 2 years ago, and then I got distracted. And so this is perfect. Now we're going to read them. I won't say we're going to read them all, but we're going to read a lot.
Well, let's just say we're going to read every Star Wars Expanded Universe book ever written.
Wow.
It's just going to take us like 60 years.
Yeah, so, I got nothing much on.
I hope we're not going to read all of them because some of them are really bad.
Sometimes that's fun, though. Yeah. So Sarah, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? And I mean, I know I've already mentioned, right, you're a new Star Wars fan, but, you know, what is it that made you go see Star Wars The Force Awakens?
Well, honestly, I went and saw it because I promised my husband I'd go see it. And I told him when we went to go see it, I'm going to hate this movie. And I think that you should admire me because I am going to go through this thing that I'm going to hate. And it's all because of you. So I did it basically to get something from him. So and then I ended up really liking it. And I left the movie and I was like, there's a ton of books. So I kind of want to read them because that's, you know, what I do. So then it started. That's pretty much it.
So out of curiosity, what is, we can't get into it very deep, but what's the one thing you really, really loved about The Force Awakens?
I don't even know. I loved the characters. I really liked Rey. I thought she was a pretty cool female protagonist who didn't take crap from anybody. But I think I liked the universe as a whole. There seemed to be a really big, sprawling thing with a lot of history and, spaceships that go from here to there. And it was cool. And it's just huge. It's freaking huge. And there's a lot to explore. And I can't not explore it. So
I think that's a fair answer. So Rachel, I didn't mention your engagement with Star Wars, but I'm going to guess you're a bit of a Star Wars fan.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up with Star Wars. Literally, in the living room of the house I grew up in, my parents had a framed Return of the Jedi movie poster. So I come from a line of Star Wars fans. And the original film came out before I was born, but my parents went and saw it in theaters, and they made sure that my brother and I were strong in the Force from moment one. And I was really into the movies. I was, as a tiny child who didn't know any better, really into the Ewok stuff. and then I did actually start reading some expanded universe, and my gateway was actually the trilogy that we're starting now. And I read some. My brother owned a lot of expanded universe stuff. He especially liked the Rogue Squadron books. But sadly, what killed the expanded universe for me, and when I kind of fell out of Star Wars fandom until The Force Awakens came out, was because I read The Crystal Star and whatever the fuck that book was where they, go to the planet of the Rancors, and I don't even know. And I was just like, I'm done. This is so stupid. I'm going to go back to reading Star Trek novels.
Oh, wow. I think the moment I quit was the book on the bounty hunters. And they told the story of all those bounty hunters in that Empire scene, right? When, Darth Vader's like, y'all gotta not disintegrate them. And they're, all creepy looking, but we don't know who they all are. And they told, one of the stories, where there's, a Boba Fett story, and then there's, the IG-88 story. And then they told the story of, the one dude who looked like he lived in the desert. And, he, fell in love with the girl who gets eaten by the Rancor, I think, in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, my
God. And, then, almost gets killed, and he, fights Boba. I cannot remember this story. All I know is, him and the tentacle head girl are, a thing. And then, she dies, or he saves her. I cannot remember which. And then that's, the story. And, he doesn't like Boba Fett, as Boba Fett's a jerk.
Wow. Yeah.
Also, in the expanded universe, Boba Fett lives. Just so you all know. Sorta. As with all things in the expanded universe, they find clever ways to save characters that people actually like. So, for example, Darth Maul is not dead in the expanded universe.
Oh, that's right, because he's got a mechanical spider butt now, right?
Well, he starts with a mechanical spider legs, and then eventually he gets I don't even know, what do you call those, bird legs? Those reverse bendy legs. That's what he has. And then no, I'm not kidding. He does. It's actually kind of cool, because let's admit, Darth Vader, Darth Maul is the coolest thing since Darth Vader in terms of Sith dudes. So, yeah, there's a whole thing. There's a whole thing. He meets the Emperor. The Emperor kicks his butt. It's a thing. Yeah. He has a brother who looks just as creepy as him. So, there's a whole planet, those creepy looking dudes somewhere. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what the women look like. Can't remember if there are any women like that, but they're kind of like dwarves, I imagine. They all just kind of look the same. Right?
I want to read that. You had me at mechanical spider legs or whatever. I'm just picturing him now like Baba Yaga's hut.
Yeah, it's in Clone Wars. The Clone Wars cartoon series. You can watch it. I think it's still on Netflix. Yep.
Okay.
Cool.
It's on the list.
All right, so we've kind of all introduced ourselves a little bit about our engagement with Star Wars, and some other things may come up throughout the process of doing this. The next piece of this is that someone is going to write a sonnet based on the book we're reading, and the person who's volunteered themselves is Kate.
Well, yeah, sonnets are kind of what I do every day and have been doing every day for quite a while. For this first one, well, you'll see. I zeroed in on the part that was most special to me. So, heir to the empire, here we go. As villains go, I kneel before the throne, with skin of blue and eyes of glowing red. I would not have him cast those eyes upon my fleet or system. We'd not just be dead, but he would find the cleverest way to play upon our fears and flaws, those we don't know especially. And as for Mara Jade, the future wife of Skywalker, I'll go so far as saying he deserves her not. These villains are what makes this novel shine, though tasty action also hits the spot. I start this podcast, therefore, feeling fine. One thing, though, force-repelling sloths are sure convenient. How'er did those occur?
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay for force repellent sloths.
Yeah, I was going to say, the yeah was not like a critique of the sonnet, which I'm just like, yeah, force repellent sloths. Planet of the Rancors, I'm telling you.
Yep, but just keep in mind, for now we got force repellent sloths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Babel fish of the Star Wars expanded universe.
It is quite convenient. It makes for very interesting happenings, that's for sure. Oh, they're so weird. I still don't understand why nobody knows about them until just now. They all just kind of figured out. But, you know, whatever. But anyway, so we're here to talk about Heir to the Empire. And that means somebody's got to tell us what this book is about, give us a rough synopsis of the story before we dive into some of the meaty bits.
Not it.
Oh. Rachel, I guess you're it.
Oh, okay. So the hero of the story, Grand Admiral Thrawn, wants to bring the Empire back to its full glory, and he's apparently the biggest badass ever, and he just didn't manage to kick all the rebels' butts because the Emperor and Darth Vader were horrible racists and nobody likes aliens. But he's, like, basically in charge of what's left now, and he finds out that there's this, like, crazy dark Jedi master, and he also finds out about the force-resistant sloths, and he's basically spends the entire book playing, like, 17-dimensional chess, where he's always one step ahead of everyone except for Luke, because he is the Mary Sue of Star Wars, and he always manages to come out on top because Luke. And the crazy Jedi Master is willing to help Thrawn, but what he wants are Jedi to abusively, emotionally, and mentally manipulate, as dark Jedi do. And so Thrawn is like, I know, we'll just like totally kidnap Leia because she's pregnant with Han Solo's twins. And they're obviously going to have powers of the Force, so you could fuck up two kids from the moment they're born. And Joris is like, sold! So that's how Thrawn gets a dark Jedi on his side, and then he goes off to start trying to conquer the world, and he just keeps getting foiled by that darn Luke Skywalker. And convenient coincidences. And Mara Jade, who is with the smuggler outfit that knows about the force-resistant sloths, because force-resistant sloths, really hates Luke Skywalker, and you find out it's because she used to, like, be the Emperor's right-hand woman, but nobody gives a shit about her anymore because nobody actually knew who she was. She was that shadowy and scary, so now she's a smuggler, and she hates Luke. And...
yeah.
I think that's
good.
And then we have a good setup for the next book.
Well, yes, because the way this book ends, kind of a big deal, right? After all, Thrawn makes way with several capital ships.
Yeah, though not as many as he wanted.
No, as usual, right? Our three heroes, Han Solo, Leia, and, well, four if you count Chewbacca, and then Luke, and technically
and
Lando.
Yeah.
Lando, yeah. So five, you know, managed to foil some of his plans by fighting a super space mech stormtrooper and keeping a few of the ships from getting away. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, this there a lot of this book is set up for the later books, because, like, okay, Thrawn got the ships. What's he going to do with them? The Dark Jedi dude is trying to lure Luke into his grasp. Thrawn has this slave race of alien assassins that used to serve Darth Vader, and they're, like, super scary, but now apparently one of them could smell that Leia is Darth Vader's daughter, I guess, and so there's stuff going on there, and there's, like, shenanigans and goings-on in the New Republic between Akbar and one of the Bothans that did not die getting the Death Star plans out, and yeah, it's like it's just this sprawling story, and that's what makes it so cool.
Yeah, there's some. I mean, there's some patent ridiculousness in here.
Force, yeah. Bubble sloths.
The force sloths. Like, I could kind of understand that. Like, maybe there would be in a.
Well, I mean,
you know,
he does kind of like hand wave try to explain why such a thing would evolve by having the predator things that hunt using the force, so the sloths have evolved to like push the force away. But it doesn't make sense when you think about what the force is supposed to be. Like, are they undead zombie sloths? And well, that's why they're in, like, no force bubbles? Or I don't know.
Okay, so keep in mind, this book precedes midichlorians.
Well, no. Midichlorians, we are not talking about those. Those don't exist.
Nope.
I'm just saying the whole idea about the force is a field generated by all living things. And yet you have living things that somehow do not generate force and, in fact, repel it.
They're dark matter. Zombies.
Yeah, they're like... spooky.
They're dark
matter.
They have
the anti-life equation.
Yeah.
That's what this is about. This book has guessed, it's predicted the existence of dark matter in the universe. They're just force repellent sloths.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so it's got some really interesting parts. It's also got some silly ridiculousness. I mean, I think probably the part that I really didn't like was that bit with the little assassin dudes come up and they like sniff Leia and are like, oh, you're like, you must be the Emperor's daughter.
No,
like,
no. You are Lord Vader's,
Lord Vader's daughter.
Yeah. The Lady Vader.
Yeah.
Let me take you to my home world, which nobody else knows about.
Yeah. That was a bit. I mean, and I like the stuff that happens with the aliens later that I'm not going to spoil, but that I was just kind of like, really? I can smell the Vader on you.
We do get to visit Kashyyyk, though.
Yes. Glorious Kashyyyk.
Yeah, it's super cool. And the way it's described, right, Timothy Zahn gives this really romantic description of the way in which the cities are built into the trees, or like part of the trees, and even some of their culture, right? The way in which the Wookiees have been, you know, evolved, and how they exist in unity with the trees. It's really kind of beautiful.
Yeah. You know? It's really a shame that all I could think about was the Kashyyyk levels in Lego Star Wars.
Oh dear.
Fair.
But yeah, it is. It's very lush and almost lyrical, and it's a really nice set of interludes. And until the violence happens.
Until the violence. Yeah. But Leia holds her own.
Badass pregnant Leia is badass.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, actually, because that's kind of a big thing here, right? Because much of this book, it's Leia running away, because she is very pregnant, kind of has some other lives she needs to think of, but she spends a lot of this book being resistant to the prospect of hiding, because she has so many responsibilities, which is something I found really interesting that doesn't get, you know, addressed in the movies, because she's not pregnant. So that's obviously not being addressed. but I do like that's part of that narrative, this conflict between what is essentially like a high-ranking official. She's basically like a general. We actually get General Leia later. But you know, this high-ranking individual who's trapped in that conflict between essentially managing the universe, or the galaxy as it were, and dealing with the very complicated aspect of her personal life, which is trying to be, you know, the leader of a rebellion and also having babies. Just, I imagine, very difficult, having not done it myself.
Well, and there's also the aspect of she's force sensitive and she really needs to be trained so she can defend herself. And I know that even comes up in the book where Luke's like, we really need to teach you how to do stuff so that people can't try to kidnap you. And Mon Mothma's like, well, maybe you'll have some time after X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. Sarah, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, one of my issues with the book was how Leia's pregnancy was kind of portrayed. And maybe in my justification, I have very difficult pregnancies and I just popped out a baby. So I'm a little, you know, but I had a really hard time reading some of this stuff and thinking, yeah, a person who's pregnant with twins totally wouldn't be doing this. I mean, maybe they would, but I couldn't do half that crap and I was just gestating one. So, I mean, but I also have really hard pregnancies. But yeah, I had a really hard time believing that she'd be all, you know, wielding these lightsabers and everyone's just looking at her like, yeah, she should totally be doing that. I don't know. I had a hard time with that.
So did you get the impression that maybe someone should have been like, hey, maybe when she doesn't have like a bunch of kids in her stomach, she should maybe not do the lightsaber bits?
No, it was more like there were points when she was, you know, being all badass, which I think is awesome, by the way. But, you know, Han's just looking at her like, yeah, you should totally be doing that. And I'm like, what? No, wait a minute. Stop this. Stop. You should not be doing this. Your doctor doesn't want you to. So that was cognitive dissonance for me. But anyway, it's neither here nor there.
Well, it's safe to say that Timothy Zahn's probably not been pregnant himself.
Yeah, well.
it's probably a pretty safe bet.
I think that's pretty safe. Yeah, so I can see some of those flaws in that portrayal. My biggest concern was that this was going to be a book where she was going to get totally sidelined from the narrative because she was pregnant.
Oh, I thought it was awesome that they portrayed a protagonist, strong female who's pregnant. I just don't think all of that portrayal was exactly realistic. I guess that's
what it boils down
to.
Yeah. She spends a lot of it almost like she's not really pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the issue that I was having. She doesn't seem like she's pregnant. If you're pregnant with twins, you aren't even going to want to move, much less, you know, kick someone's ass. But you can, you just probably don't want to. And I don't think your husband would want you to either. So that's...
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But the force.
Yeah,
the force.
Well, maybe the force gets rid of things like morning sickness and, you know, yeah,
swollen
ankles.
Pressure on your bladder.
Maybe that's the benefit of the force. Maybe all women in the Star Wars universe should just have the force.
Oh, that would have been nice. That
Jedi Romy Joanne.
Yeah. I just... You know, in the Star Wars expanded universe, there are, like, it's mentioned in the book that people attune their force abilities in different ways. Not everyone becomes, like, warrior Jedi stuff, right? Only some of them do. Some of them attune their, like, healers, things like that. And they even mentioned that that's possible that Leia, her aptitudes may lead her towards different things than fighting. And that the reason she needs to learn the lightsaber is just so she has those skills for defense. Not because she's going to be the greatest lightsaber fighter in the history of mankind. So it's interesting that that's being brought up here because it's not something explored in the original films for the obvious fact that the Jedi are dead. yeah, they're kind of dead. But it does make you wonder, right? Like, in this universe, are there, like OBGYN Jedi dudes that, like, use the Force? Like, if there's a baby that's, like, coming out backwards, can some dude use the Force to gently move it around?
That seems like actually an excellent application of the
film. Right? Yeah.
I would read the shit out of, you know, Dr. Quinn, Force Midwife.
Oh my God.
I would read the shit out of that.
I think you should send a novel proposal to Disney and just be like, okay, guys, it's time.
It's time.
All over it. All over
time
it.
Has come.
Yeah. Dr. Quinn, Medicine Jedi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Something went wrong at Kylo's birth. Sorry, Ben.
Yeah. That could be the case. Maybe there weren't any healer Jedis and he like came out sideways.
Well, we know that there weren't any healer Jedis because like at that point Luke
dead.
Is still the only one and I would not want to let Luke anywhere near my uterus.
No. Well, keeping in mind, right? Like even in this book, like the Luke that we get in Heir to the Empire is nothing like the kinds of Jedi we get in the prequel films, right? Where they're enormously powerful. Like, Luke is still very much hindered by the fact that all of the Jedi he's learned from have been old dudes who can't do, like, you know, we know that Yoda can do flippy stuff because it's in the movies, but like, by the time he meets him, he's like 8 billion years old. He's like 800, but right? He's old. He actually is using the cane for real now. It's not like a trick. He meets Obi-Wan Kenobi, who's like this guy who's literally sitting on his retirement fund, like in the deserts. Yeah.
I mean, the thing that I love about that, though, is when you look at Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then, you know, oh God, I'm having a brain fart.
Ewan McGregor.
And not that much time has passed between the end of Revenge of the Sith and the beginning of A New Hope.
Well, that's because...
it's been like 20 years.
Well, you know why,
it's
right?
It's been a rough 20 years.
People age quicker on Tatooine. Like, apparently. Luke is actually 8 years old.
Oh, so it's only been 8 years.
Right. Yeah. Like, he's years old in that world. Like, he's not like a, like, he just ages quicker. He looks like he's like 25.
But yeah.
And still suits have hair whitening properties.
There's that too. Yeah. I'm making all this up. No, this is true. it's just one of those inconsistencies. There's a reason why they discarded the expanded universe, is because it's a giant mess. There's lots of great stuff in it. But if you try to like keep Heir to the Empire and the rest of this series like in line with the rest of the universe, it's gonna be like you know, like any religious text, everyone's gonna find that like one line that like, contradicts another one, and they're gonna argue about it. It's like the parsec thing, right? Like, I can do it in however many parsecs he does it in, right? Like 12 parsecs, right? That's not a time. Like, parsec's right. It's a distance.
Yeah, but you can always just answer that because, you know, it's how you plotted your course. I mean, you know, I made it in 12 parsecs because I cut through, you know, this place and did that. And I made the right turn at Albuquerque. And
yeah, but you know, Lucas was like, parsec, that sounds like a cool thing.
Right.
It sounds like a smaller second. Oh.
Or it's a space-time thing.
So, yeah, maybe.
It's distance and time.
It's Doctor Who. I don't know.
Well, one thing I kind of wanted to bring up while we were just discussing stuff is, having recently rewatched particularly A New Hope, and I'm starting to wonder if Heir to the Empire is kind of to blame, you know, like Timothy Zahn's books are kind of to blame for the sort of like suave, hyper-competent Han Solo that we seem to see a lot, like, in the expanded universe. When you go back and watch the movies, he is kind of like a walking human disaster. And, I mean, you know, and you get back to the walking human disaster in The Force Awakens when the bad guys are just like, you know, there's no one left for you to swindle in the universe. No one trusts you. He's not like, you know, he's a fast talker, and he like talks people into doing things, but he really is just like this giant disaster area, and he never is like a disaster area in Heir to the Empire, because I think it sort of gets justified as like, oh yeah, I've been totally like watching how Luke does stuff, which Luke is not that much less of a disaster area.
Yeah, it is interesting at Han Solo, because, you know, all of the things where he quote unquote fails are not failures on his part. His plans are perfectly competent. Like, let's go to Lando. He's got this crazy, weird facility we can hide there, right? That seems like a perfectly logical thing, right? Nobody really knows that Lando's there, right? They don't know that he's going there, but Thrawn figures it out, right? They decide to send her to Kashyyyk, right? That's a perfectly logical thing. It's a weird planet full of Wookiees. It seems like it'd be a perfectly safe place, right? Nope. Thrawn figures it out. Right? It's like, it's not like any of the plans they make are bad plans. It's just that Thrawn always seems to be that step ahead. And he's always got this great, like, poor Peleon, right? Like, comes up to him and he's like, dude, this is a bad idea. And Thrawn just looks at him and goes, yeah, but it worked, so shut your face.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's got this great bit at the beginning, in like the first like third of the book, where he basically explains why the Empire failed. Right. And it's like a combination of incompetence and the death of the Emperor. Like, we learn this thing about the Force, that the Emperor was so powerful that he was actually like using the Force to touch all of his you know, his military forces, and not so much like taking them over, but like boosting their, like a psychological boosting device to make them more competent. And when he died, that shut all of that down.
Well, yeah, and that's just battle meditation, right?
Yeah.
I probably played too much KOTOR, but that was always, yeah, that's battle meditation.
Right, it's essentially battle meditation.
Yeah.
And that's why he wants, it's Jorus, because this is one of the things I hate about this book is we know he's different because he says his name wrong by adding another U. He must be a clone. That's the only moment when I go, Thrawn, you know. Like, you've never met Jorus. Shut your face. He could be the normal guy. How do you know he's a clone? Like, do a DNA test, for Christ's sake.
But if he's a clone, it'll be the exact same DNA.
Right. That wouldn't...
Unless it's got, like, a little made on Coruscant tag on it or something. Like,
it's got to, right? The Emperor's that much of an egomaniac. You know he put a tattoo of his name somewhere.
Yeah.
My intellectual property.
Right on the inner thigh.
I was thinking inside the left butt crack.
Oh.
Because how many guys do you know, like, sit around with mirrors checking that area? None. Nobody does that. Unless there's something wrong with it. And how many guys have a mirror they can look at there? Yeah, nobody does that. Come on. See, as I was emperor, I would have been smart. Yeah. But anyways, I that's one of the things I really like. That's why they want the Dark Jedi, right? Because they want him. Because the Force is like, poor Thrawn is dealing with. He's like got all these remnants. These kids who are, you know, incompetent. They're not very good at what they do. They're, you know, skittish. They're like, what's left of the Empire is this just broken force of half-trained morons, right? And
it's
Thrawn,
all the fanboys who've been sitting there all these years going, man, when I'm in the Imperial fleet, we're going to do it this way. And realizing that it's totally different when your butt's actually in the chair.
Yeah, and when you don't have the might of the Empire behind you anymore. Ooh. Yeah. So it is really nice that that's, you know, they kind of enhance that idea of how influential the Force is and what it can do to a military force, even a smaller military force, right? That I like that. I like that explanation. It's a little silly, but it's also kind of nice because it makes the Force into something that we haven't seen, because when this book came out, right, the prequels didn't exist. The Force Awakens didn't exist. This book was one of our first explanations for what happens after this massive civil war, and learning about the extent of the Force, because we never see it with the Emperor, right? We see small demonstrations. He can shoot lightning out of his hands, which is terrifying. But we're told he's like one of the most powerful people in the entire universe. How? Right? Darth Vader tells us in the first movie, right, that the power of the Death Star is insignificant next to the power of the Force. This is what they're talking about, right? You can do so much with the Force without even people really fully knowing that that's what you're doing. I think that's, yeah. So anyway, I'm gonna shut up.
Well, now that we're talking a little bit about the Force, one thing that really kept bothering me as I was reading this, and this is kind of a bugbear of mine generally, I really hate books where you've got really well developed characters. And the author steals their agency. It's one of the reasons why, I basically sworn off Stephen King forever, because he's the worst about doing that. He makes these amazing characters and then he sends them message dreams and intuitions. And so they'll do what they want. And there was a couple bits of that in this book. I'm thinking especially about when, they change C-3PO's voice to mimic Leia's, over his objections. Which just sent me down a rabbit hole wondering, you know, how much autonomy are droids supposed to have? And, but, you know, he's like saying, no, no, this is bad. This is a bad idea. It's against my programming. Ah, shut up. And then Leia, makes a remark at one point. I've got it right here. I suppose that one of the things I'm going to have to get used to, that's one of the things I'm going to have to get used to, letting the Force move me around. And, ooh, that just rubbed me the wrong way. Cause that's almost always like the author going, oh, you characters, you're not doing what I want you to do. Well, I'm going to make you do what I want you to do. Oh, I hate that.
Can I poke in really quickly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the issue with droids is something that my friend Karina and I had like a long discussion about over a car drive. because it's in several of the books, I want to say, that it's basically, it's common practice for droids to get wiped regularly. So it's like actually super unusual that R2-D2 and C-3PO haven't been regularly wiped. And that's why it's like a big deal when they're talking about seeing so much loyalty in R2-D2, because it's so unusual, because droids like basically have no memory or personality. And as soon as they start showing one, they get wiped. And that's like, we were talking about in relation to The Force Awakens, where I was like, okay, knowing that about how most droids are in the Star Wars universe, where it is this really creepy thing when you start to think about it, because they do seem quite sentient, you know, they're sentient AI. But I would guess that, say, like, Poe Dameron doesn't have BB-8 wiped, because BB-8's got a lot of personality and a lot of loyalty to people.
Well, and remember, like, that when he realizes BB-8 is alive, his reaction to BB-8 is not what we normally expect, right? When they see C-3PO, right, it's kind of like, here's that annoying damn droid again.
But when he's the fussy droid. But I think there is something about the hero characters that we get in Star Wars are the ones that generally treat droids like they're actual real people.
Yeah.
You know? So when we get kind of smacked with that reminder that droids are actually sort of like this created, almost, you know, enslaved things, but they're not people, they're AI, but when we get reminded of that, it's like this real, like, why would this heroic character do that? Because they're, to us, those droids are people, and normally they get treated like people.
And it just seems to me like, if there's this technical ability to make something mimic Leia's voice, why can't they just
use a computer?
Why can't they just use a computer or a recording or. Yeah, that I don't know. It's probably a silly thing for me to have gotten hung up on, but
I don't think it's silly. I think it's actually, like I said, I think it's very indicative of a much wider thing that never really got explored in the expanded universe, I don't think.
Okay, so that's two items are on our agenda. We've got to write a Force midwife story, and we've got to write a droid story.
A droid slave revolt story? Yeah.
Oh, man.
What if all the astromechs just like packed up and were like, peace out, we're gonna go find our own planet.
And they took all the ships with them?
Yeah.
I want to read that too.
Contact me, Disney. I will write the shit out of that.
Yep. Call us. Call us, George, if you have any pull.
So Sarah, I actually wanted to ask you, because you know, this is you're brand new to Star Wars, to the expanded universe, to like this may have been your first Star Wars novel that you've mm-hmm. read, right?
Oh, yes.
So what did you make of Heir to the Empire, you know, in general, and anything in specific that really stuck out to you?
Oh, I'm not familiar with much, so some of the stuff was confusing, and I had to kind of put it together as I went. Like, I wasn't sure about what the Death Star is, for example. I mean, that's how new I am. I am a very rare breed of Star Wars person. I do not exist in the wild. So a lot of the stuff was confusing. I don't quite understand fully how the Force works. And sometimes the Force was probably where I had the biggest issue, because a lot of it just seemed super convenient.
It is.
and you know, and it just seemed like kind of lazy writing at points. So, you know, let's not make people work for it. Let's do our mind juju for it. And that's fine. But that was kind of my biggest complaint. And I really liked Thrawn himself, but he was kind of, you know, he was always so far ahead of everyone that he also at times seemed a bit convenient. Like, I don't know. But other than that, it was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed it. And I think I'll enjoy it more once I understand what the hell happened before it. So that's that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, you need to finish the original trilogy.
Yeah, I'm working my way through it. I've read the first book and watched the first movie. And then I've tried really hard to read the second book in their first prequel thing. But I just, that one just hurt.
Wait, the prequels? You're watching the prequels?
Oh, you're watching them in chronological order.
No, yes. No. Just stop yourself right now. Go to the prequels are not going to help with this book anyway.
No, I know, but I'm just working my way through it to see, you know.
You're never going to finish it.
I like to torture myself, but the second
masochism.
The second book is just killing me. I mean, I read like 200 books a year and I read them all, and this is the first one that I've been like, I just don't know if I can do this. So we'll see.
Yeah. But Attack of the Clones is so bad that honestly, sometimes the holiday special is actually enjoyable. And so you may want to try that, Sarah, is go on YouTube and find the Star Wars holiday special and watch that. If you can get the holiday special with commercials, that's even better, because the commercials are just wonderful.
The thing that's killing me about the prequels is there's so much potential for all this awesome stuff, and it just all sucks. I mean, it just sucked. Like, Darth Maul is one of the most wasted characters I've ever read. I mean, come on. And then the second book, I don't even know why it exists. And so, whatever. But everyone says the third book is amazing. So I'm trying to work my way through book two, and then I'll get to book three, and I hope I like it after that. But
fair enough. Alrighty, so we gotta unfortunately wrap up, because otherwise we could talk about this book for the next 6 hours. And we don't have that time. It is a 400-page novel, so there's quite a lot of stuff we miss, but that's okay. So we're going to end by talking about some general thoughts and letting you know where you can find us on the internet in case you want to yell at us for being wrong. But please don't do that. Just be nice.
It's okay to disagree, as long as you're nice, you know, as long as you're polite and kind.
Exactly. So, Rachel, quick last thoughts about the movie, and then let folks know where they can find you on the interwebs.
Well, I don't know about a movie, but I'll give you my last thoughts about this book.
Well, whatever. Look, in my mind, it's a movie.
Well, it pretty much, it would have been an amazing movie. I love these books. I love Thrawn. He is ridiculous. I mean, he's like basically the Sherlock Holmes of villains when you come down to it. He's Mr. 17-dimensional chess in all directions. And yeah, I love, he is my favorite villain of all time. The first fan fiction I ever wrote was about Thrawn. And I wrote it on an Atari.
Oh, wow.
So these are very special to me.
Fair enough. All right. You want to tell people where people can find you?
Oh yeah. And you can find me on katsudon.net, and you should totally go there now and donate money to Act for Change so that I have to watch stupid Gods of Egypt. And I'll do it drunk and write mean things about it.
Awesome. And she's also on Twitter at katsudonbury.
Yes.
There you go. All right, Sarah, last quick thoughts about the book and where folks can find you.
You know, I really liked it a lot more than I thought I would, but it kind of surprised me. I had problems with it, but I think most of it's because I'm completely ignorant. So that's no one's fault. But yeah, I liked it. I'm excited to read the next one to see what comes next and get more into the Star Wars universe. And if you want to yell at me, you can hop on over to bookwormblues.net and yell at me there, or on Twitter, I'm at bookwormblues.
Perfect, perfect. All right, Kate, same thing. Last quick thoughts. Where folks can find you?
I'm still most interested in the question of who the heir to the Empire is. Because, of course, the obvious answer seems to be Thrawn. But Princess Leia. Lady Vader. I hope we get some more exploration of that in the next book and our next podcast. You guys can find me, I'm mostly on Twitter, Kate Sherrod on Twitter, KateSherrod. And I also have a couple blogs, but the one that I most would love people to look at is Pulp Sonnets, which is where all of the drafts of I'm doing a project where I write short stories in sonnet form, and I do a different genre every day of the week. And the first volume of that is going to be published, and it's looking like March, with really amazing illustrations by M.R. Nino, comic book publisher. He did the Signifiers and lots of cool stuff. So storysonnets.blogspot.com or kateofmind.blogspot.com.
Perfect. Awesome. So the answer to Kate's question, the heir to Empire, is obviously force repellent sloths. They are the heir to the Empire.
They are the kryptonite of Star Wars.
Bam. There you go.
The cockroaches of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
Someday they'll be all that's left. I still like the idea that they're zombies.
Yeah.
They could be. They could be. So my last quick thoughts are, I mean, I really did enjoy the book. I mean, there are some things in it which I just knew I was getting, because I read this a long time ago, of just ridiculous stuff where I just think, like, that's just stupid. Why did they let him write that? And other things where I'm just like, it was really nice to have some of the banter when the characters are together. That just made me really happy.
Mm.
It just made me want to watch the movies again. So, but it was a lot of fun to read. There were some really interesting ideas. There's a lot of mystery still left. And I liked how it ended, where we learn what Thrawn's plan is. And it's this really elaborate thing, and all the pieces start to come together. It was really kind of cool. It was almost like a little mystery. So I like that a lot. So yeah, you should read it. As for me, you can find me at SeanDuke.net or on Twitter at SeanDuke. Sean is with a U, not a W. It's not E-A-N. And it may be that one day I'll just be known as Thrawn Duke, but
yes.
We shall see. So,
Thrawn and the Thrawnettes.
So the next episode we'll do, which will be next month, will be Dark Force Rising, the second in the Thrawn trilogy. I will not be hosting that episode, so it'll be someone else taking charge. So that should be very fun. And yeah, so thanks for listening very much. It's been a blast.
Yes.
All right. On that note, bye.
Bye. The saga continues.
Intro and outro music for this episode comes from Juno by Cronox. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org or by going to skiffyandfanty.com and looking at the show notes for this particular episode.